Fat Diary Podcast. This week, you'll remember last week, I started my diet/quest. Tony and I were on the Moors, I must stop saying every two flicking seconds. We were on the Moors. I'm stuck doing that now. That's just happening forever now. We stayed on the Moors in the night time while Teddy Watkins was stolen by a monster that covered our tent in some kind of bile. Tony had been stabbed through the arm with an errant Swiss Army knife, and we'd just gone out to see where Teddy Watkins had gone, because he'd been snatched in the night by a horrific monster. So please join me as I continue my story. Here we go.
15th of October!
Don't say it's a silly Cecil.
Sorry.
15th of October. I've done nothing today. Yesterday took it out of me, so I've been staying in bed. Mostly. Actually, let me return you to the point at which we left off. Yesterday on the 14th of October. Well, I left the tent. I turned round to look at the tent. It was covered in a disgusting brown liquid, covering every single inch of the tent, like a kind of thick, non-clear slug trail. I've had some underpants look like that. Anyway, I rushed over to where Teddy Watkins had been sat on the seat in the Moors, and the slime was covering that too. Tony was just stood, looking concerned, and I said to him, "What's happening, Tony?" And he said he couldn't tell me. He just said,
"Trust me, Paul. One day you will see Teddy Watkins again. One day."
I thought, not sure I trust you. Lost my place now. When Tony's wife came back in her car, because obviously she dropped us off the day before, Tony scooped up a jar of this bile stuff that was covering the tent and everywhere. And then we unpacked all the things from the tent, all the technology, the camera, the monitor, etc. Then we put them in the car, and Tony just set fire to the tent. Eugene's not going to be happy about that. I'm pretty sure it was his. Tony wouldn't tell me why he set fire to it. It's been awfully mysterious, isn't it? After a quick pop into casualty, and Tony's arm got sewed up, we drove home. I asked Tony when or how we're going to get Teddy Watkins back, and he just said,
"In time."
And he sort of wiggled his fingers around his face when he kept saying that. I wanted to punch him again. I hate it when he gets like this. It's usually when he's been watching the US television drama Lost. He tries to be all as mysterious as possible and won't give answers to the most basic of questions. Every year he watches this. I don't want to be around Tony every October. He's completely infuriating. Like, you ask him, "Tony, do you want a cup of tea?" And he just sort of raises one eyebrow and sort of goes, Prick. 16th of October. Tony wanted to continue with the next part of the quest today. I ran out of air then. But I was too upset after losing Teddy Watkins. Last night was the first night's sleep I've had where he hasn't been there. It's like losing an arm. You know, a cuddly arm that hugs me and stops the dark thoughts from creeping in at night. Judith Floppy Dog just doesn't cut the mustard. You know, I tried having her in bed, but, you know, she's got plastic eyes which dig into the back of my left man bosom when I roll over on her. And that was the good thing about Teddy Watkins. It was just pure fabric. He could or would never hurt me. I'm sure his wife's going to kill me. Oh, I miss you, Teddy Watkins. You're the nearest thing I had to a best friend. Where are you now, Teddy Watkins? I'm sorry I can't write any more, dear diary. I'm too upset, like a woman might be.
Oh. 17th of October.
Right, It's time to get proactive. Proactive like a yoghurt. Tony came round this morning and told me what the next step of this diary thing is. Not diary, diet. It's the mist in the valley of the unthinkable. We've got to collect some mist. Tony wasn't clear on how to do this one. He kept saying,
"The writings are unclear."
I didn't know you could collect mist, and neither did Tony. But Mum had a good suggestion. She said, just get a sealable sandwich bag, wave it in the air till some of the mist was in it, then seal it up. A simple... she pretended to be that meerkat from Compare the Meerkat adverts. Dad just threw a copy of TV quick at her ankle because he hates them. She gave him a filthy look. Pardon me. We couldn't find the Valley of the Unthinkables on any maps. Tony consulted a mystical writing that he's been getting all this gibberish from, and apparently it's somewhere near York. You know, it's quite handy that all these things are within travelling distance. You know, like we don't have to go to Brazil or New Zealand or something. But conveniently, this is a mystical Yorkshire diet quest. Speaking of the actual diet, I am losing weight. I could actually fit into my 52-inch jeans this morning, though I could not sit down in them. We got Tony's wife to drive us up to the area where we thought the Valley of the Unthinkable might be. Though she didn't speak a word to me. I think she's mad that I punched Tony in the face and then, you know, stuck a knife through his arm. You know, indirectly, but it was still a bit my fault. She can hold a grudge. We eventually saw a steep decline in the landscape, which when we walked into it was all misty and that. So we walked down the slope leading into the valley, and once we were at the bottom, I couldn't see my hand in front of my face. So thick was the fog. I asked Tony if this was fog or if it was a mist, and he said he didn't know the difference. So we just both got loads of sandwich bags out and started spinning round and hopefully collecting some mist in a bag, and then we headed back up an hill. Or so we thought. I kept walking for about an hour, but I couldn't find my way out of the valley. I shouted at Tony, but he didn't respond. I began to feel very, very damp. Damp like some kind of rented accommodation in winter. It was an unpleasant sensation, certainly. I kept walking and shouting for Tony, or his wife, because I think she was out there too, but absolutely no replies were forthcoming. Eventually, I walked off the edge of a cliff. 18th of October. Hospital's not so bad, really. All the bed rest you could want and saucy nurses to attend your every bladdery wish. So Tony says. Anyway, I wouldn't know about that. I spent most of the evening in casualty having my wrists and ankles looked at. Apparently I've broken nothing, but I've badly sprained my penis. But that's got nothing to do with falling off that cliff yesterday. You see, when I fell off the cliff yesterday, I landed on a haystack. I hoped I might find an erotic couple frolicking in the hay, as I imagine all farm workers do. But because of Brexit, there was none to be seen. And I couldn't see anyone, or in fact, find any kind of needle. I did have a look, but not for long. I dusted myself off. Hadn't been hurt too much, just a few bumps and scratches. So I saw a farmhouse in the distance. There's a light burning in the place. As I was singing that. Yep, Mum texted me to shut the fuck up. Such a rude old woman when I'm trying to express myself through interpretive song. Anyway. I saw a farmhouse in the distance with a light on, and I began walking to it, when I suddenly heard a scream behind me. I turned round and saw someone fall off the same cliff that I'd just done. I rushed over to them, and it were Tony. He didn't land on the haystack, he landed face first in the giant mud puddle. Then there was another scream, a much high-pitched scream, and it was Tony's wife come tumbling down the cliff too. If cliff's the right word, dunno, 10-foot drop. But when does... just a drop become a cliff? I don't know. I just don't know. I rushed over to them. Tony's wife had landed face first on Tony's bottom. They were both somewhat unconscious, so I dragged them out of the water and You know, for a split second, a naughty thought crossed my mind about, you know, touching Tony's wife's bottom. But, you know, I thought, what's going on here, Paul? Come on now. You're not a caveman. You're not just going to touch up some unconscious woman. Get her in prison, that's wrong. So I didn't do it. And I was quite proud of myself. I thought, yeah, you're all right, Paul. You're an all right guy. Anyway, I put them both on the haystack. Is it wrong that I put them in a sort of suggestive pose? And that I lied Tony on top of his wife? But they're married, it's fine. Anyway, I couldn't see any apparent injuries on either of them. Though when they woke up, Tony's wife was terrified she might have a concussion. And I said to her, well, if you feel poorly, maybe loosen off some of your clothing. And then she just punched me in the face. But she can't have been that badly off, can she? We staggered over to the farmhouse. Tony's wife was furious. She's always angry, that woman. Apparently she was wearing her best shoes. It turns out that Tony had made it back to the car and they'd waited for me for ages. And when I didn't come, they both set off looking for me. And she resents me because I got lost, like it's my fault. Apparently they both had an argument about the whole thing. Doesn't look like she's going to be driving us to any more locations after today. Bitch. Anyway, we reached the farmhouse just as it was getting dark. The farmer was quite nice. He drove us back to where Tony's car... Well, Tony's wife's car was, sorry. Let's make that distinction right now. We told him about the quest we were doing. The farmer looked at me, gave me the once-over, you know, head to toe, gave me a nod and a wink, and then gave an envelope to Tony, and he left. We got back in Tony's wife's car, and Tony opened the envelope. Tony said it was a business card for a music shop in Biddington. Not sure what that's all about. As we drove home, Tony's wife kept calling us blithering idiots. Seems like Mum's influence is rubbing off on her. And then Tony started being sick. So, yet again, we popped into casualty just to get him checked out. A female nurse, about 86 years old, touched me on the inner thigh. She said she was just checking, but I thought she was checking for an erection. Never going to find one down there, love. Don't know what you're thinking.
19th of October.
Tony was round.
Stupid idiot.
Look. If I go wrong, I like to sing myself a little song. It makes me feel a little bit better and stops the thoughts creeping in about the second I go wrong. I start thinking in my brain, you're not good enough, Paul. You can't do this. Stop doing this. Why are you doing it? But if I do a chirpy little song like that, it makes me feel a little bit sexy and very, very intelligent. Now, say 19th of October, Cecil.
19th of October.
Tony was round bright and early this morning. 2:30 in the afternoon. But it's early for me because I just got out of bed because I'm a lazy shit. We went to the music shop that the farmer's business card pointed us to. I'd never been in this part of town. It were very old-fashioned. Tony said it was the old town. Apparently they filmed some parts of a Heartbeat spin-off round here. Why no one told me about this is beyond me. I'd have given everything to be an extra in an Heartbeat-style programme. I'd be considered quite attractive in the 60s, I reckon. Not now, though. Anyway, the music shop had all brass instruments in the window. I don't like brass music. It's too pompous and self-righteous. If Mum was a music, she'd be brass. Anyway, we went in, and the shop owner was posh. He was wearing a tweed suit, tiny glasses, and looked like the sort of regal snobbery that only a posh ponce can wear. I wonder who will get to voice this then. The second he saw us, he put his monocles to his eye and said,
yes, can I help you at all?
I tried to run away. We're too posh and snobby for a urban go-getting guy like me. Tony suddenly sparked up, saying,
no, fair shopkeep. Hast thou divine rapturous glory in thine heart? Lo, did thine old lark not speak to thee upon this fine morn? Dittipithsworth hath the sooth to dine, dame, fair lady.
Yes, that's right, because he, the shopkeeper, was a woman. I was convinced it was a man. Well, Butch. Must be the lack of bosom and the beard that threw me. And as soon as Tony had said those magical words, whatever bullshit that was, he was saying to her, she bade us come hither to the back room. We went through to the room, and it was filled with all weird pipes. They looked like pipes that you'd see in a church pipe organ. The posh woman asked us to wait while she brought us forth the pipe of peace. I thought, hey up, gonna see Paul McCartney singing the pipes of peace. That'd be fun for me. Never met a beetle. So we waited for about 20 minutes, but the posh woman didn't come back. I went to see if she was in the shop area, but it appeared to have been locked, as if she'd shut up for the day. So I went back to Tony, and Tony said we should explore the door that she left there. So we went through the door, and it led to some stone steps which led down, a long way down, sort of, like to a dungeon. Tony claimed this is probably part of the old tunnel system that runs all under the old town from before the war. He mentioned something about masons, but I was too busy watching the big spider to pay attention. Eventually we reached a big stone room. It was all getting a bit too Da Vinci Code for me. We explored the room and found, hanging on the wall, a flute-like instrument with a plaque labelled The Pipes of Peace under it. I thought, no, oh, I'm not going to get to meet Macca. Next to it was a shelf of sheet music entitled The Ballad of the Unwise Ones. Two for one, we thought, having them, put them in my bum bag. We stole both items, yes, and walked upstairs. Well, I say walked, I mean hobbled. I had to have a sit down after about every 14 steps, but that's quite good for me. Eventually we reached the top, and there was no sight or sound of the woman, so we tried to leave. Only bitch had locked us in. We tried the back door, but that was also locked. So we just had to sit there in the shop, fingering the pipes. That's not a gay slang for I didn't touch his genital. I just meant we were playing with the pipes in the wall. It was a music shop and I like my music. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Anyway, after a while we were sat in the back room, a door burst open. We could hear frantic coughing and spraying of hissing type noise. We thought, what the hell's that? And the woman came dashing out, face crimson, bright red, a look of terror upon it. Then an all-powerful stench it was, as if the gates of hell had been opened and Cerberus had passed wind right in front of our nostrils. The woman said she'd had a bad Chinese takeaway the night before and she was having the mother of all diarrhea attacks. She profusely apologised for making us wait so long. Tony said we had what we needed, the pipes of peace, the ballad of the whatever it was. She said we could borrow them so long as we never ever go to Fung Lung. And I said I wouldn't because it sounds like lung fungus, which really put me off the food. Didn't want to eat any lung-based funguses, no matter how deep-fried they are. Teriyaki Fung Lung. No, thank you.
20th of October.
You all right, Dad?
Yes, hurry up, I want my tea.
Sorry. Tony rang me up this morning saying he had to spend the day with his wife again. God, this man is so hen-whipped. Or pussy-pecked. Not sure what the saying is. I stayed at home trying my damnedest to find out if I could find a snack food. I thought Mum might have hidden the food in the shed because she knows I don't care what's in there. I'm not going in there because of the... Should see some of the size of the spiders in that son of a bitch. Massive. No way. I don't care if it were full of Fun Factory Cola and just bags of salt and pepper Walker's sensations that I love that don't exist anymore. Won't go in there. And you know what? Bitch were right. She'd put all the snack foods in the shed, but I could see at least 5 ginormous spider's webs above the food. And as much as I would want a bag of crisps, there's no way I'm going to risk getting the spider on my neck again. No way, whatever.
21st of October!
Nearly done, Cecil. Then we can go get waffles, sausages, chops, black pudding. You can have a tomato if you want one.
No, I hate them.
I know you do. I was just saying it to wind you up.
Little shit.
You old shit. 21st of October.
I'm saying the dates, Paul.
21st of October. Eugene rang up this morning asking what the hell was going on with the album and the radio programmes. I'd forgotten about everything else. I've been so fixated on losing some weight so I can get back to eating snack foods. I forgot about my normal life's responsibilities. So I did a live conference call with Tony, Dad and Eugene. And by that I mean they all came round and we had a chat over a cup of tea while we watched some Bargain Hunt. Tony said,
"We need to acquire the liquor of Lomacor."
Which is probably the most dangerous part of the quest, apparently. It means milking La Macour. A beast so foul and depraved will be lucky to escape with our very souls intact. The journey will take 18 days, apparently, and he says we must travel across the foothills, mountains, dales. We must camp rough, fending for ourselves, living off the land until we find, kill and milk the lizard-slash-camel-like monster to acquire the liquor of La Macour. To which Eugene said,
"I've got some at home, actually. This goes quite nice with a head of wind frappe."
And Tony were overjoyed, as was I. I didn't like camping last time, so the thought of doing that for 18 days with that trumpy son of a bitch was unpleasant, to say the least. Eugene buggered off home and brought back this liquor stuff. It just looked like milk to me, but I wasn't going to drink it. It smelt very peculiar. Tony said we should all meet back here tomorrow and bring camping equipment, for the final task would be undertaken in just 24 hours. And finally, I will fit into my 48-inch jeans. And finally, Mum will let me have a drink of cola beverage and 20 bags of crisps.
Tune in next week for the exciting conclusion of this fat bastard doing ridiculous things in a pathetic attempt to lose just a few ounces of his blubber, flubber and chubber.
Hey, Cecil, shut up. This is my Da Vinci Code here.
Absolute drivel.